And Ron, most of the time you were trying to get that pitcher just to balk, because any kind of little movement that he does, and he doesn't know it, just a little instinct, a little twitch, he gets a balk. And that's what the third base coach, first base coach used to always get a bigger lead or get a good bigger lead, and you start thinking about him, or a verbal sign with a guy on third base in a stretch position. I can see left-handers balking more with that, with their back toward the runner, than a right-hander. But those guys that used to screen stuff, talk to you, you know, just talking right to you, and you're hearing it. But the whole key is just to relax, and you drown it out. But I still say the minor leagues, and even in college ball, the coaches chirp, and they want you to get any kind of rattle you can. And if they get you once, they're going to continue to do it.
Yeah, that's a, Bill, it's a great point. Chirping. Whoa, do you do that? Do you talk at all to the other team? And sort of, you know, it's the bench jockeying from where you are, or does that go on? Have you seen that go on?
No, that doesn't go on in professional ball at all. Okay. I mean, you know, in college, I'm sure it does. But, you know, to Bill's point, you know, what we do mostly is if we have a pitcher he's nervous, and whether he's in the stretch or the windup, usually in the windup, you can try to get him the balk. You know, I'll tell the runner, hey, we're going to false break here. Especially with third basemen today, when a left-handed hitter is up, their third baseman is so far off the line. And, Bill, I don't know how you feel, but that third base guy in third base, the runner, he can get halfway to home plate. And that makes that makes the pitcher uncomfortable seeing him there. So what we usually do, if I know it's a pitcher that's not very composed, maybe he's young, you can, you know, you have reports in these guys, you can see who could get flustered by runners. You tell the runner to false break, and maybe right before the guy starts his windup, when his foot's on the rubber, the guy takes off three or four hard steps like he's stealing home and stops, and you'll get pitchers to balk in that regard. So that goes on all the time. And, you know, as a base running coach, you always want your base runners to put pressure on the pitcher. And now Bill was well composed out there on the mound, but it affects a lot of pitchers. You want to rattle them. You want to keep the pressure on them with your big leads or false breaks, or if they're not holding you on at third, get as far down as you possibly can to make everybody nervous. So that goes on every day.
And, you know, Ron, you made a great point. Catchers do get rattled when that guy's coming right down the line, because back in our day, you had more guys trying to steal home plate. And then you brought that point up. And I tell you what, you get guys, very quick runners, a Tommy Herr, Vince Coleman, guys that just rattle you when they come all the way down the line. Of course, their first step's going backwards. But yet you see them out of the corner of your eye, and all you want that pitcher to do is get flustered for a half a second. And they call a balk, and boom, you got to run in. And you know that opposing team's going to be chirping the rest of the day at that pitcher.
Well, I love it. That's why we need games. You see, this is what this is what baseball's all about. Not worried about, you know, grievances and everything else. This is really why we love the game, for situations like this. And you guys explain it really well. A couple of things. One, Pudge Rodriguez, 19 years old. This is the anniversary of his debut as a major league catcher. 19, he was the youngest to catch in the big leagues. I was thinking of Renee Latchman or someone like that. I'd have to look it up, but they said it was Pudge. And you guys competed, well, Bill, you didn't, but, whoa, you certainly went against Pudge enough, even as the Marlins when he tacked out JT. I remember that. But what about Pudge Rodriguez? Where does he fit for you guys?
Well, he's at the top of the list for catchers. I mean, you know, he was a darn good hitter. You know, he was a contact hitter. He'd shorten his swing. He'd put that ball in play. He used the whole field. But really where he made his impact was behind the plate. You know, there's certain guys in the league as the base running coaches, or when we have our advanced meetings, you'll go into a meeting, and if Pudge Rodriguez was the catcher that day, you would go to every base runner. We're not stealing short secondary leads, because he's going to throw behind. He's going to pick somebody off. The other guy is, you know, Molina in St. Louis has been very good. But Pudge, to me, was the best that I've seen at throwing and picking guys off. So, you know, our base runners, whenever we went up against Pudge, their primary lead, is their primary lead. You can't pick them off, but their secondary lead, we would shorten it up and make sure they come back hard to the base, because if you got lax at all, you got a little bit too much, you're out. So our lead looked like the Little League League, you know, where the kid has his hands out They're straight out to his side, and he's about 2 feet off the base. That's what we do when Pudge Rodriguez is behind the plate.
Really? Wow.
Well, that's great. And I tell you what, I just looked him up. 13-time Gold Glove winner right there. You know, of course, Hall of Famer, Texas Rangers inducted his number. But I just remember when he threw, the mask would turn over the ear. He'd throw so quick and so hard that his helmet would move. And I just remember him blocking balls left and right. And as a hitter, he could hit. He had some power, hit the ball in a gap. But I just remember him as one of the best fielding catchers that I've seen in the current era.
Boy, you talk about runners and made me think of Jackie Robinson. Guys, I saw that. I mean, Jackie Robinson, when he would get to third base, and I had this discussion with someone this week, when he was on first or second, you know, he was always a danger to go. But when he was on third, you never took your eyes off him. And, whoa, in those mm-hmm. days, you know, they wouldn't pitch from a stretch. They'd do the windup. And he would just take off down that line. It was, I'll never forget it. I'll never forget it. Maybe the best I've ever seen.
Yeah, Marty, well, you've seen a lot, and you're right. And, you know, those are some of the things in the game that, to me, that just makes the game more exciting. There's more to look at than just, you know, the pitcher's throwing and the hitter's hitting. You know, whether it's a pitcher bunting or you're running a bunt play to get the lead out because you want the lead out in an extra inning game. Mm-hmm. You know, we're talking about a runner in second base. You're going to let them bunt the guy to third, and now you have to mm-hmm. bring the infield in and the outfield in, or you're going to try to run a play to keep that guy off of third. So you know, they can't advance him to third base. A lot of those things are, you know, out of the game today because of the DH and the way it is. So we'll see how it plays out with the run on second and you know, an extra inning. So, you know, I don't know, Bill. What do you think? Do you think the fans are going to like that, you know, that the game will be shortened? And I know TV
I'm you know, I'm an old school guy. I'll sit out there for 18 innings if I have to watch a game end. You know, those are the fun points of going to extra inning games, you know, to see that game winning hit when you're sitting there for 4 hours, or the game running home run, or somebody makes an error to win the game. Those are things that I remember in extra inning games as a player and a fan. I just questioned the designated hitter in the National League. I saw in the options they were doing for 2020 and 2021, they're already adopting it for next year, and I kind of scratched my head on that because I'm a National League kind of guy. I want to see pitchers still hit. But I'll look at the DH and see if it works in both sides, but I'm still a traditionalist. I like the National League having that pitcher and American League having the DH. I just don't like both leagues having the DH. And give it a try, but don't push it so far ahead.
Well, this extra inning thing is going to be different. Well, you're right. You've got a lot of experimenting to do. And Bam Bam was in the middle of it, remember, with the WBC. He got beat. Didn't he lose games because of that?
Yeah, they had that. They lost, I think, the pivotal game where I don't believe he bunted. He played it straight, and I can't remember if the team scored or not, but it's you know, the one positive of it, it's going to bring some second guessing into the game,
just like
when the pitcher hits, right? When
yeah.
the
mm-hmm.
pitcher hits, you're going to say, well, do you leave Bumgarner in? You know, we're down by 2 runs in the 8th inning, but he's a good hitter, but we need to score, you know, so you're going to pinch hit for your pitcher. So it's going to bring that into the game, and in that regard, I can live. I mean, I'm a traditionalist like Bill, but I can understand this. I think the television, I think the fans, I think we had a fireworks night one night here most recently, and the game went like 18 innings, right? It was like a 4.5 hour game. And the poor fans, you know, the kids are all excited. Everybody wants the fireworks. And the kids are sound asleep by the time the game ends. That's not good for anybody. And then the TV people are mad because, you know, the special that was on that night, they can't air the special. So I think that I can live with that. The rules that are harder for me to swallow, like Bill, I've been in the National League my whole life, and, mm-hmm. you know, I don't think it makes the game better by having the DH in both leagues. It's not as interesting. And I'm not a fan of you have to face 3 hitters. The pitcher's got to face 3 hitters. The game's going to be on the line. It's going to be won and lost by that. And I don't think it makes the game better tying the manager's hand and your personnel not being able to make a move where you need to make a move.
All right. No, well said. Well said. We'll see what's going to happen. I hope we get a chance to to second guess.
Yeah.
I'll have fun doing that. That'll be a lot of fun. Hey, before we leave Pud Rodriguez, and Johnny Bench for me was always the best. Campanella and Yogi Berra and Fisk and Carter, and there were some great ones, but for me Bench always stood out and Pudge always stood out. But the one I hate to tell you, but for the one image of Pudge, it's when JT smashed him in the Marlin game and he held on to the ball.
Yeah, no, you're right, Marty. That was a big moment for us, obviously, and it went against us. And, that was it. That was the series was over, and they advanced and went on to win the World Series. And, it was a big moment, and I certainly have that etched in my head as well. But he was just a great player, and you take that for granted. You talk about catchers blocking the plate like Mike Socia, how good he was. Runners would fear him that he's going to drop his knees. Well, Pudge was right there, too. You're not going to get through Pudge if there's a play at the plate. That old school catcher is going to block the plate, and you better go in hard, but you're going to get – he's going to pummel you if you're not ready for it. So, that's out of the game as well, and for safety reasons. But Pudge was very good at it.
Mm. All right, good
Ron,
discussion.
I tell you, Ron, those are the little extra points that you put with a catcher, the little things where they're not going to flinch when the ball's coming in and you got a runner coming around third. He was one of my – I loved your Socia one. Socia was the best at that. And Johnny Benson, in my eyes also, Marty, was probably the best catcher I watched growing up. And even just watching films of him now when he played with the Reds back then, there was just something special about all those catchers. And, of course, the guidance with their pitching staff, you never hear the communication they have with them and how many pitchers love to throw at certain guys. Because that chemistry, brain to brain, mind to mind, pitch to pitch. And those are the guys that are elite catchers. And, boy, those three are the top ones in my mind, too.
Yeah, Fisk and Carter, really, for me, they were fabulous. And, just amazing what they could do. But, yeah, it's a good discussion of catchers and how they impact the game. It's so important. A couple of things. One, last week, heck, we were talking about Mike McCormick. And he passed away on Saturday, and we were talking about his no-hitter, and we did a little bit of a eulogy to him, and then found out this week he passed away last Saturday. So Mike McCormick, and the other one was Claudel Washington, and we didn't get to him. And, Bill, I think you knew Mike really well, and you knew Claudel as well. So we should at least mention it for the fans.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Marty. Both of them were very good friends of mine. Of course, Mike... as a Giant and then going to fantasy camp, he was just a stellar guy to all the campers. And reading Facebook over the week and how many people just cherished his friendship and storytelling, and just a stellar guy on and off the field, an ambassador for the Giants, 4-star. I miss him too. I talked to his family several times this week. I was close to Deidre, his wife, and Matt, his son, and spoke to both of them. And, Mike ended up having dementia after he had Parkinson's, and it just kind of caught up to him. And his celebration of life, they're going to have it in North Carolina. And then the Giants, Larry Bear told Matt that they're going to try to do something down the road, Marty and Ron. So hopefully we all can celebrate Mike's life, because it was a great baseball life. And on the other side, Claudel Washington, a very close friend of mine, Oakland native. Played with the A's, played with the Braves back in the 80s. Just a fierce left-hand hitter, speed, good defensive outfielder. And he lost his life to cancer, and he fought that for the last 3 years. And speaking to him, and he just kept telling me, I'm fighting, Billy. And then the fight was over. His last couple phone calls in the last 3 months, he said, I just can't go any more chemo, can't do any more radiation. It's kicking me down. And just those sad conversations I had with Claudel in the last 3 months, and then he finally passed, family around him. So two great guys, two good friends of mine, and two hard days that I took when I found both of them that passed away.
Well, Claudel, for you, did you know him at
all? No, I didn't. And, I didn't see him play a whole lot. He was a little bit older than I was, and never ran across him. Of course, I know the name and how good he was. And we talked about Mike. I had the chance to talk to him several times. It's great that you can point it out, Marty, and listen to Bill talk about these two guys now that they're no longer with us.
Yeah, Claudel, for me, I mean, he was an athletic. And what I remember, Gaylord Perry came in. Gaylord was pitching for Cleveland, and it was probably 74, maybe, something like that. And I think he'd won like 16 in a row. And those were the days that, you know, I was trying to figure out who would win a game and that kind of stuff. I was kind of having fun with baseball. And I said, boy, Perry against the A's, this should be okay tonight. And it was a rainy night, and the ball was wet. And Claudel in 8th, 9th, 10th inning, whatever it was, hit a little topper. And Gaylord couldn't get to the ball, and the winning run scored. And that was the end of the winning streak. I'll never forget it.
Well, you know, Claudel played 17 years in a big league.
Amazing.
He had a great career. I was looking at it the other day, last week when we were going to talk about him. 6 years with Atlanta, that's where I faced him, and that was with Bob Horner, Dale Murphy. They just had a killer lineup, and he was batting like 6-7 in the lineup. So that was just a good year for him with the Braves. He played with a little of the Yankees and ended up his career in the American League. But just a guy that Oakland loved. I mean, he was a Northern California guy, and he got drafted by the A's and signed with them. And just life is short, and we have to be friends with our friends daily, because tomorrow you might lose one.
Mm, very good. Hey, we always spotlight a coach and a couple of players. So before we take our break, let's spotlight our coach. And it's going to be Joe Lafay, and a very quiet guy. But he had an interesting major league career and an excellent scout and a very good coach. So, whoa, Joe Lafay, you knew him well.
Yeah, well, Joe Lafay is at the top of my list of friends in baseball. And, you know, I knew of him when I played. We were at instructional league together back in the early 80s, and I didn't know him, but we trained at Pirate City. I was a Pirate, and he was a Yankee with the New York Yankees, and Rags was in that camp. Joe Lafay was there, and, you know, all the great Yankees. But the first time I got to meet Joe in person and talk to him is when he came over to the Giants. You know, Brian Sabian and him went to high school together. He's from Concord, New Hampshire. They went to high school together, and then they went to Eckerd College and played at Eckerd College together. Most people probably don't know that. So Brian Sabian and Joe Lafay were very, very close their whole life, and Sabes brought him over. And Joe came over as our Triple-A hitting coach. So he was my hitting coach when I managed the Phoenix Firebirds, two seasons in Triple-A, and we hit it off. And honestly, he was a mentor to me, a great hitting coach. I loved my time with him. And, of course, he was a major league hitting coach, assistant hitting coach. And he did advanced scouting for us. He's done it all in the game, and he's still scouting for us today, and I still stay in touch. But, you know, I, a lot of the beliefs I have about looking for good hitters come from Joe Lafay. And, you know, we used to dissect the game, and we were very close, as I said, on the field and then off the field. We'd relive the game at dinner or over a few drinks. And I know Joe's scouting for us this year. I don't know how much longer he's going to do it as well. But, you know, I can go on and on about him and stories he tells about the Yankees. Like, for instance, I'll just leave it at this and let Bill go. He used to tell the stories when he was with the Yankees and he was a young guy. You know, Joe had a tremendous arm. He was a right fielder and he could really throw the ball. And Reggie Jackson was the right fielder in New York. And, you know, Reggie, he's the guy. And Joe used to go out there at infield practice when he'd take infield and show him up. And Reggie would be telling Joe, hey, take it easy. Of course, everybody else on the Yankee team would be egging Joe on to let him have it. And Joe's got that New England that fire in him. And he wasn't about to back off for anybody. And he just used to bury him in infield practice. And what a great guy and a great coach.
Yeah, I tell you, I faced Joe Lafay in the early 80s when he was with the Padres and then the Phillies. And he used to be the pinch hitter, you know, left-hand pinch hitter specialist, and he always put the ball in play. He was really a attack kind of guy. Not a lot of power, but just that kind of disciplined hitter where you throw the ball too many times on the outside corner, he'd go to left field with it. And back then, they had Sixto Lescano, they had Rupert Jones. So, I mean, everywhere he went, there was good outfielders. Then he went to Philly, and sure enough, Philadelphia had Gary Matthews, Von Hayes. So, I mean, he was stuck behind the eight ball there, too. And he ended up playing some infield. I was reading a little story about him. He wanted to play third base. And he started playing third base in Philly, and they finally said, well, we don't even want you to play there because Mike Schmidt's there, and I don't think you'll have a chance to play anymore. So he kind of backed the field. But Joe, just a great guy. You could always talk baseball with him, and always the delight. You saw him at different events and around the ballpark, always had a smile on his face, and always greeted you with a smile and always shook your hand, and just a stellar type guy.
Very good. Hey, well, what kind of player was Brian Sabian? I've never asked that before.
Yeah, well, I heard some stories with Joe and Sabe. They go back and forth, you know. It's pretty comical. But I don't know how much of it is true. You're talking about their high school days, but I don't think Brian was of the caliber of LeFay, but you know, Brian likes to tell stories about Joe LeFay playing basketball. He was the hatchet man on the basketball court, right? So these two guys would go at it. It's like in hockey. You got the hatchet guy. They send Joe in to foul people. That's how good he was on the court. And I don't know. And he liked to shoot. You know, as soon as the ball hit his hands, I heard the ball went up to the hoop. He never passed to anybody. So that's just a couple of guys talking and enjoying himself. But I'll say this seriously about Joe. He is a great evaluator, you know, just not a great hitting coach, but he knows baseball and he knows development. You know, he came over from the Yankees. He had Derek Jeter and Bernie Williams and Tina, all those great Yankees when they came up through the minor leagues. He was in the middle of that, developing those guys. And to hear those guys talk about the stories of Steinbrenner and holding the coaches accountable if their number one prospects didn't make it, you know, and putting the coaches on the line saying, when's he going to be ready? And why isn't he doing this? There was accountability. So he comes with a tremendous baseball pedigree, and I was very fortunate to be around him as long as I was.
Terrific, terrific. Mm-hmm. Joe LeFay, very good, very good. All right, we'll take a break. Bill Lasky, Ron Wotus with us. We've got a couple of players to talk about. One is going to be Pat Burrell, and the other, Edgar Renteria. What a career this guy had. There's a special on tomorrow night about Ken Griffey Jr. This is the anniversary of his 500th home run hit on a Father's Day. So I want to talk about that. And then we've got another couple of areas to get into. So we'll take a break and be back with Woe and Bill Lasky right after this.